Jessica Ramos from Trade Unionist in Solidarity with Colombia summarized the struggle at the Coca-Cola bottling plants in Colombia.
We can no longer sit still. We can no longer keep quiet as we learn of the atrocities these men and women in Colombia are experiencing. Threats, kidnappings, tortures, and murders have taken place in response to unionization. We believe earning a living wage in order to provide ourselves and our families with food, shelter, and clothing is a human right, and we will stop at nothing to defend it.
Luis Adolfo Cardona witnessed the assassination of union contract negotiator Isidro Segundo Gil at the Carepa bottling plant in 1996, and he had to flee the country after paramilitaries attempted to kidnap him.
This Week in Radical History for the week starting February 9th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer, and radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website. Here's a tiny bit more about one radical struggle in Colombia. Thanks for listening.
I noticed the paramilitary had jumped back onto the motorcycle and were fleeing the scene. When I reached his body, I put my hands under his head. At that point, I realized that his head had come apart in my hands. My hands were covered in his blood. I noticed that his two young daughters rushed towards him and now in his pool of blood were telling him, "Daddy, Daddy, wake up, don't leave us."
This week in Radical History for February 9th, 1886, President Cleveland declares a state of emergency in Seattle because of anti-Chinese violence. Since the disgraceful butchery of the Chinese in Wyoming 7 months ago, the anti-Chinese feeling in the extreme Northwest has become more violent and nearly universal. Following a declaration the Chinese are, quote, immoral and degraded and a constant menace to free institutions, to the home, and to the family. The Chinese were the Mexicans of their day. Now neo-Nazi skinheads are on the rise in this country and all over the world.
Hate crimes against Latinos have risen nearly 40% since 2003. The National Hispanic Media Coalition wants to know whether a spike in anti-Latino hate speech on TV and radio, coming not just from the fringes but well-known talkers like Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh, is contributing to the violence. Last week, the group called upon the Federal Communications Commission to investigate the relationship between hate speech and hate crimes.
This is a national epidemic. The growth is spurred each day by hate speech, distortion of facts, and anti-immigrant sentiment expressed on cable shows, local radio shows, and across the airwaves. The serious topic of immigration has been contaminated by hatred and racism, and it's created a toxic climate which fosters and condones violence, all motivated by bigotry.
The more we forget our own history, the more horrors will be revisited. Also on February 9th, 1917, San Francisco labor agitator Tom Mooney is falsely convicted of a fatal bombing. He is pardoned and released 22 and a half years later. Thomas Mooney's show trial was conducted in a lynch mob atmosphere and featured several witnesses whose testimony was coached by the prosecutor. It included one witness who claimed her astral body was at the scene. Also on February 9, 1982, President George Bush Sr. denies he ever used the phrase voodoo economics and challenges anybody to find it. NBC's Ken Doty promptly broadcast the 1980 tape in which he has said the phrase.
Does anyone know what Vice President Bush called this in 1980? Anyone? Something D-O-O economics. Voodoo economics. Voodoo economics. Voodoo economics. Voodoo economics. Anyone? Anyone?
Lastly, for February 9, 1994, a Senate report reveals the U.S. did ship biological agents, WMD, to Iraq with Reagan's approval. Just in case there's any debate about that.
Anyone? Anyone?
This week in Radical History for February 10, 1855. The Women's Hospital in New York City is founded. Although it did provide much-needed care for poor women, the hospital is also an arena for J. Marion Sims, known for his hatred of women and ruthlessly cutting up their bodies. Here he will perform brutal operations using indigent women as guinea pigs before audience of men. Sims began his career performing dangerous sexual surgeries on black slave women who were housed in a stable in his yard. On one particular slave, he performed 30 operations. After the affiliation with New York Women's Hospital, Sims performed the same number of operations on an Irish indigent Mary Smith. Internationally famous and honored by his peers, Sims was the object of adulation from the Harvard Medical School, counted as one of the immortals. I guess you can be immortal if you sell your soul to the devil.
Anyone? Anyone?
Also on February 10th, 1892 in Spain, four farm workers are executed during a repression following an uprising in January of Jerez, setting off a new wave of violence in Spain. Last month, hundreds of farm workers calling them a social revolution took over the town of Jerez. The insurrection was quickly subdued and leaders captured and tortured. Anarchists would fight a good fight for years in Spain, including in 1932, the anarcho-syndicalist NCT proclaimed general strike, and more insurrections followed. Within the week, the Catalonia city of Teresa is taken over, and anarchist commune is declared. Two more items for February 10, 1961. The Voice of Nuclear Disarmament pirate radio station begins operating off the shores of England. Last Anna State in 1962. Francis Gary Powers, a CIA pilot in a super-secret U-2 airplane, is captured by the Russians. When the United States government learned that Powers disappeared over the Soviet Union, it issued a cover statement claiming that a weather plane had crashed down after a pilot had difficulties with his oxygen tank. What U.S. officials did not realize was the plane crashed almost fully intact, and the equipment was obviously not used for weather forecasting, since it was long-range telescoping lens that aimed down. After Powers had finally returned to the United States, he is criticized by his handlers for not using the CIA-issued suicide pin. I wonder if that suicide pin was the flag lapel pin on his jacket.
This is your radio roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, February 11th in 1916, black feminist and American civil rights activist Florence Kennedy was born in Kansas City, Missouri. Flo Kennedy began her career as a lawyer, but quickly lost faith in the American judicial system and decided that practicing law might never be an effective means of changing society or resisting oppression. Flo turned to political activism and in 1966 set up an organization called the Media Workshop to fight racism in journalism and advertising. She continued her struggle for justice both in the courts and on the streets, aligning herself with movements from the Black Panther Party to abortion rights, and even publicly rallied against the Vietnam War. Flo's political activism extended in all directions, and one of her favorite mottos was that you have to fight on all the fronts, all the time. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also this week in Radical History, on February 11th, 1978, Longest Walk begins. 300 Native Americans start march from Alcatraz in San Francisco, California to Washington, D.C., organized by the American Indian Movement, AIM, to shine a light on the plight of indigenous peoples in America. Also on February 11, 1987, President Reagan tells the Tower Commission he did not approve arms sales to Iran, which was a lie, after the weapons sales were revealed in November of 1986. Ronald Reagan appeared on national television and stated that the weapons transfer he intended to occur, but the United States did not trade arms for hostages. The investigation was compromised when large volumes of documents relating to the scandal were destroyed or withheld from investigators by the Reagan administration officials. Same old, same old. Only two more items for February 11, 1990. South Africa political prisoner Nelson Mandela is released after 27 years in prison by the U.S.-supported apartheid government of South Africa. Also on the state in 2006, duck everybody duck. After a couple of noon toddies, Vice President Dick Cheney, armed and dangerous with a shotgun, peppers a millionaire contributor, shooting him in the face while bird hunting. People, the
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, February 12th, in 1853, Illinois passed a law stating that no black person from another state was allowed to stay in their state for more than 10 days. If they were caught, they were to be arrested and either subject to a $50 fine or temporarily auctioned into forced labor. These laws, known as black laws, were extremely common in the southern states, and the state of Illinois had particularly harsh tactics. Although Illinois entered the Union as a free state in 1818, slavery had existed there for almost 100 years and continued to exist for a long time. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on February 12, 1913, Mary Harris, Mother Jones, leads a protest of conditions in the West Virginia mines and is arrested. A government official once called Mary Jones the most dangerous woman in America. She was very dangerous to the establishment order because she was fearless in her defense of the oppressed working class. For 60 years, she went into mining towns where men often feared to go, organizing unions. The miners called her Mother Jones, and she is still out organizing up to the age of 83. This week in radical history for February 13th, 1633, Italian astronomer Galileo arrives in Rome before his trial of the Inquisition for professing beliefs that the Earth revolves around the Sun. Now, how silly can that be? Remember, the Pope is infallible. Also on February 13th, 1921, Peter Potemkin's funeral is held in Moscow. It would be the last public anarchist gathering and last non-state-sponsored mass assembly in Russia for 70 years, as Lenin, Trotsky, and the Bolsheviks begin a crackdown to secure their power over the working class. Under the pressure of libertarians and anarchists, prisoners were allowed to attend Potemkin's funeral. The crowd was estimated over 100,000 following the coffin to the cemetery. Black flags are deployed and banners proclaiming, "Where there is authority, there is no freedom." Also on February 13, 1945 in Germany, over 130,000 killed as the Allied firebombing of Dresden occurs. Remains little known event in today's history as the Allies downplay the slaughter of innocents. In a three-day period, 3,400 tons of explosives and incinerators were dropped, reducing 6 square miles of the city to rubble. Many Allied officials were outraged. Germany was clearly on the verge of collapse, and Dresden was not a German war production city. Dresden had been famous for its artworks and historical buildings until it became victim of the single most devastating air raid of World War II. Also on this date in 1967 in the United States, National Student Association reveals that it was secretly and indirectly receiving more than $3 million from the CIA over a 15-year period. NSA President Eugene Grove denies any money was used for intelligence work. Yeah, right. The funds given by the NSA were used in a variety of projects, all approved beforehand by CIA officials. As he told the New York Times, some of the information apparently was passed directly to the CIA employees, and some of it, in the course of normal business, went to the files of the NSA, to be later accessed by clandestine operations within the association. Those students have signed secrecy oaths with the CIA would then be bound by penalty of law to keep their knowledge of the ultimate benefactor from the public and the rest of their organization. CIA money, domestic spying. I think I've heard this before.
This is your Radio Works reporter, Hannah George. On this day, February 13th in 1971, the Southeast Asian country of Laos was under severe attack by South Vietnam and the U.S., who encouraged and supported the invasion. Presenting a huge threat to American war interests, Laos played a key role in the Vietnam War. This war, commonly known as the Secret War, turned Laos into one of the most manipulated and exploited battlegrounds used between America and North Vietnam. The war left Laos in political disaster. Also, the Laotians who were recruited to help the U.S. became despised in Laos, and the U.S. left them at the end of the war in a very bad situation. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away. Say it.
Lastly, for February 13th, 1995, Chase Manhattan Bank distanced itself from a newsletter calling for Mexico to eliminate the Zapatista rebels in Mexico, according to the New York Times. The Chase Bank pointed to the uprising in Chiapas as a major element in the fight for foreign investors. Mexican security forces began a large-scale takeover of the former rebel areas on February 9th, less than a month after the memo was published. Mexican security forces engaged in widespread violation of human rights that continue to this day. The memo also suggested that the Mexican government might not find it convenient to honor the results of the upcoming elections. This uprising has boosted the price of the Mexican Indian blood, said by a man known as Subcomandante Marcos, who led the Zapatista National Liberation Army in Chiapas. Not long ago, it was valued less than 2 chickens. Now it is a condition of the largest loan in history, Subcomandante Marcos said, referring to the $40 billion loan proposed by the Clinton and his neoliberal friends.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, February 14th in 1804, New Jersey became the last northern state to abolish slavery. Actually, the legislation called for the gradual abolition of slavery, and it aimed to phase slavery out over a 25-year period. Ironically, the act granted financial benefits to slave owners. In the years since, New Jersey has built itself a rather bad reputation as far as racial discrimination and police brutality goes. The New Jersey state troopers are often accused of targeted racial profiling and violent tactics. The names Asada Shakur, Zaid Malik Shakur, and Sundiata Akolai come to mind. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Okay, coming close to the end of the show, this week in Radical History, also for February 14th, 1895, Oscar Wilde's comedy, The Importance of Being Earnest, opens in London. A free thinker, Oscar once said, "Disobedience in the eyes of anyone who has read history is man's original virtue. It is through disobedience that progress has been made, through disobedience and through rebellion." Hear, hear, my man. Lastly, for February 14th, 1991, in Iraq, while the military and American press are gaga with their proclamations of precision bombing, U.S. warplanes bomb civilian shelter, killing at least 500 in Baghdad. Happy Valentine's Day from good old Uncle Sam. This week in Radical History for February 15th, I only have one item. 2003. Over 15 million people around the world in over 300 cities demonstrate in opposition to the American government's agenda to overthrow the government of Iraq through military invasion. Up to 2 million demonstrate in London, up to 3 million demonstrate in Rome, 1.3 million in Barcelona, 600,000 in Madrid, up to 500,000 in Berlin, 200,000 in Damascus, 200,000 plus protests in New York City, ringed by police snipers, 30,000 protests in Los Angeles, and about 25,000 hit the streets in Seattle, and over 1,000 in my small little hometown. All that effort, all that organizing did nothing. The voice of the people stopped nothing. And after the war started, most anti-war protesters stayed home. Yeah, that showed the Bush administration what's what. To quote MASH, war never ends, they just take it on the road.
Defense Department regrets to inform you that your sons are dead because they were stupid.
This is also the end of This Week in Radical History for this week. Special thanks to WBAI in New York, whose audio I borrowed for this show. Little announcement here to let you know that by popular demand, I and Glee Glee Studios will be producing a 20-minute segment from time to time, consisting of more current alternative media reporting, looking at it from a more anarchical perspective. The show will be called Cannon's Report, and will be coming out from time to time, here and there, almost willy-nilly, let's say. Our goal is to shoot for once a week, but we have to see. Again, that's Cannon's Rapport, at the same place you can find this show each and every week, radioforall.net and the Pacifica Archives. Got to run. So until next time, whenever that might be, one thing is for sure. I am always and forever yours in the struggle, Mike Cannon.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
This concludes our broadcast day.